Welcome to the G&JB Show, episode number 44. Jack, we've been doing it for a while now.
Yeah, we haven't been doing it for a while, but we've been doing it for a while.
Yeah, that's right, mate. Today we've got Steve Wahanko. Steve, how are you, mate?
Always good, White Axe. How are we, guys?
Good. Well, me and Jack were on time, but yourself.
I was writing on Filipino time.
That's why we gave him the little chair, so he looks like a midget.
He's Logan famous now. Yeah. He doesn't need to turn up on time.
So what we're going to be doing with our latest podcast is we're going to do life stories generally. Tell us about the life, funny times, bad times, hard times, good times. Steve, tell us about where it all started, mate.
Well, look, you and I are pretty close. So you know there's a lot of ups, but there's also a lot of downs.
Yeah, that's right.
Especially in this sport. So, no, it's not an easy road. So I'm not too sure where do I want to begin.
Let's start at birth, mate. Where were you born?
Born in the Philippines, of course, yeah. Born in the Philippines, moved to Sydney, Australia, and then from there moved up here when I was 16, and then from there, yeah, been up here since then.
So up until you were 16, there was no boxing in your life, was it? There was
no.
What did your life consist of then? Were you a sporty kid or were you a?
Definitely a sporty kid. Loved my rugby and basketball, and then because of the transition from Sydney to Brisbane wasn't a kind of good one. I got violent when I got up here.
Yeah.
So I was a bit of a violent kid as soon as I got here. And then, that's when it started to – I started actually at NTG, at Nuggets Gym, kickboxing, because I was told to go do something like that.
How old were you then?
16.
16, yeah right. Where'd you play rugby though?
Pine Rivers Pumas up here when I was up here in Brizzy, but down in Sydney I actually played for Eastwood. So played representative footy there and for Redfield College.
Did you also get a scholarship to Nudgee too? Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, I could tell you that I nearly lost it on my first day by grabbing a guy by the throat.
So that's the stories we want.
So I was playing footy and that sort of, like I said, I was a sporty, violent kid. And what happened was, the new school I was at here, some reason gone to a real big fight where they had to call the cops on me and the school sort of shut down for a little bit. It was a small school, Colby College. The cops came, took me away. I don't know if I want people to know this now, but it's true. It's my story. And then
hang on, Steve told me I'm not going to talk about bad stuff. So he's just gone straight into himself. So this is perfect.
Then that's the truth. And then, part of that process, they were talking about counseling should try a sport like boxing or Thai boxing, and then I found Nuggets Gym and started their kickboxing, and then I went and found Ducky to pick up my hands in boxing. Then I went back to Thai boxing, and I was professional boxing. Then I went back to kickboxing. Then I went back to boxing, and then I finished off with a tough man fight in 2015.
you trained with Barry Sewell as well, didn't you?
Barry Sewell. Yeah, started my pro career with Barry. Good old Barry. And it was good because in the amateurs, he owned a trophy shop. So when it was his tournament or his boys, we had the big trophies. Like some of my trophies from the amateurs are massive, you know. So no, he was good. He was a good coach.
So when you first got into the Thai boxing, what was it? Your mum just took you down or?
No. I got
teachers or?
I don't know if they would, be happy. Well, I got kicked out home when I was 16.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was lucky because of my footy coach put me up. And then because I went to Nudgee, there was a scholarship to like boarding as well. So I was actually there boarding, which was lucky. It was a saving grace because, I legit didn't have a place at the time. And then one of my best mates took me in during the holidays and then just back and forth and whatnot. So,
Bit of a gypsy.
That's exactly.
Floated around a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's it. That's how I found the sport of boxing or violence, controlled violence.
So did you think, when you were a kid, did you think footy was your way out? Was that what you were thinking?
Yeah, I loved footy. Actually, there was a crossroads. So Expo Mejia, he was the Filipino Volcanoes football coach. And he came over one time and said, I could play for the Philippines. Nothing big, but it would be good to represent your country. But I was only 60 kilos at the time. So he said, you got to put on beef and be 85 kilos or something. But then I was sort of, I like the box. So I chose boxing over a few things, like where I was doing a carpentry apprenticeship. And then my boss, Jimmy, at the time was like, mate, because it conflicted with the training hours, you got to choose, be a chippy I'll be a boxer. So I chose boxing. And then, yeah, expo offered me a position to say, come play with the Philippine Volcanoes or choose boxing. I chose boxing. Mm. So, yeah, sort of overrided everything.
Yeah, wow. So did that lead into an amateur career, Steve, boxing-wise?
Yeah, I had a few amateur fights just under global, not through Boxing Queensland, with Barry Sewell. And, you know, that some good stories there. Like in Roma, I'll never forget, you'd drive to places like Roma. And back then, it was a bit of a cowboy place. Yeah, yeah. I'll never forget. It was the main event. I won the fight. I'm walking away to the corner. So the guy that lost, who's from Roma, came around and punched me in the back of the head. And everyone started going rioting because he lost. And then, so they escorted me to the back.
On your way out from the ring?
No, yeah. When I'm walking back to the corner of the ring, the guy got the shit.
In the ring here?
Yeah. While I'm walking back to the corner, and the boom, turned around. Yeah, that was pretty funny. So anyways, and then you drive to places like King Roy. You guys know this. Yeah, you weigh in, you don't get a fight.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because I only really known you as a professional boxer because when I first, my first session at the boxing shop, this was 14 years ago now, I remember you running in sweat gear.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't even remember, but I remember running.
I definitely remember when you came.
Yeah, I remember you running in sweat gear and I was like, what the fuck's he got all that gear on for? It's fucking hot outside. Why are you putting on more shit? You're going to sweat anyway, mate. Yeah. And then like, as I've got into the sport, I understand what you were doing at the time, but yeah, I wouldn't have known anything about your amateur career or anything like that. So elaborate maybe on your changes from the amateurs turning professional and that journey.
Can I just say one thing on that? This just actually shows how old we are, White Axe, because I remember as a little kid coming in.
Yeah.
You know, I remember Clay Waterman as an 8-10-year-old. I remember Justice, you know, Liam Parra when he was living with me as a 16-year-old. Yeah. Like, all you guys are now grown adults becoming superstars, but we've known you since fucking knee-high.
Yeah, and then you've had me, promoted me on shows. And
that's true.
It's all come full circle.
It's crazy.
It's cool. Like, the sport gives you those... like as much as there's bullshit in the sport, there's also times where you can look back and you go, like, I've made a lot of good friends.
It's the best
connections.
Same as Andrew Hunt. Like, he trained with me at Barry Sewell's, the Hunt family. And Andrew at the time was 8 before he could even fight as an amateur. You know what I mean? Yeah. So we used to train in the garage and now, you know, he's got so much potential.
Yeah. But going back to the transition.
Yeah. So it's different, I guess, with global. It probably suits more the pro style than Boxing Queensland, I'd say, because Boxing Queensland's such a, you know, like that's the road, the pathway for the Olympics, very point scoring system where globals, you know, you just go in and punch on. With, it's a fight. So that suits the pro game.
Get punched in the back
of the head. Yeah, that's it. Oh, even the fight nights at Woodridge where there's 36 fights and your fight's not until 12:10 at past midnight.
Yep.
Oh, geez, that was wild. Yeah. No, that's it. So, like, I guess, and then you do see, you guys see it. There's a lot of amateurs or good purist amateurs that struggle with the transition to the pros because it's a different game, you know. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think I suited more the pro style. And Gareth knows I'm not a boxer. I'm just a brawler. Like, I love just throwing hands.
Mate, just like every Filipino, they can hit. Filipinos can punch. Mate, when you were asking before about him, Stephen, sweating it out, one time...
I'll never forget this. I tell the story all the time.
I made him live at my house just to watch his fucking weight. He was
10 kilos over.
I made his smoko and he had like, a handful of almonds. Yeah. And that was like your lunch smoko, wasn't it?
Yeah, this fight, I was the week of the fight, I was 10 kilos over. So I had to stay at Garrett's house. Yeah. And my dinner would be, this is true, would be a tin of tuna. And fucking lettuce with like, I don't know, carrots. Gareth had his steak eating it in front of me. And then he'll get his Magnum Ego eating it in front of me. This is good ice cream.
He wouldn't do that, would he?
That's life, mate.
Yeah, that was funny. I remember that. I tell that story all the time, actually. I was like, my fucking coach. He would eat a steak in front of me while I'm cutting weight.
I remember I was talking to Alfie DiCarlo once and he goes, I was telling him about, Steve rang me this, must have been just talking to him in general, and I said, Steve rang me this morning, and, I remember you ran and lifted the windscreen wipers up on my car to prove that you'd been for a run. talking to Alfie, and Alfie's going, what do you mean? Like, that's your job, isn't it? I said, yeah, but to Steve, he's like proud that he's been for a run. His boxers now listen to this podcast, please?
Yeah, that's it. I always tell them, do as I say, not as I do.
That's right.
What I did was not right.
You'd be close to 60 kilo now.
Yeah, definitely. 65, I think. Add 30.
So, mate, what about your working life? Like, okay, we've gone through a bit about your school life at Nudgee College and what was it called in Sydney? Where, what school in Sydney?
Redfield College.
Yeah. Were you in trouble there at school?
All the time.
Was it all fighting?
Yeah, everyone would vouch for that. Yeah, definitely. So I'll here's another story.
Yeah.
True story. When I was in grade five, this is how much of a little shit I was. I was picking on this kid on the school bus that was in grade eight from another school. And then he got his grade 12 brother or grade 10 maybe brother, 10 or 12, to punch me in the head. So what I did was I used to call him Banana Man because he had a head that is... Yeah, Banana Man. Because there used to be a cartoon called Banana Man.
Yeah.
Right. So he got the shits that I was teasing him about that. Got his brother to punch me in the head. Lenny Hayes, who was the captain of St. Kilda, Lenny Hayes. He was my older brother's best mate.
Right.
Okay. So when that guy picked on me and punched me, we organized everyone in the bus to bring bananas the next day. This is a true story. So when that guy got off the bus, we all threw the bananas out the window at him, and he came running on. And yeah, so that I was definitely. Trouble.
In 2023, would you be classed as a bully?
Yes. No, but look, yes. I've learned a lot. I was definitely a little shit, but not anymore, I hope.
What ages would you say you struggled with the most with that violence and growing up, Steve?
16 to 23.
Yeah, 16 to 23.
When we moved up, because it wasn't a good move up. And then my life was in Sydney. Like, all my mates were there. So I definitely struggled to sort of settle in here when I moved up.
And what would you say was the turnaround in your life at that point to pull yourself out of that?
That's a good point. I'm not too sure. I do think the sport of boxing. Yeah, like when I was here, when I was with you, I was definitely good. I wasn't into any trouble or anything stupid. But before sort of having that outlet, and it's true, like you hear the story, or you know, repeated over and over again, without having that outlet to sort of let your energy out, you know what I mean, that anger or frustration. If that sits there and boils up, it just becomes a very short fuse. And
footy didn't give you that?
Yeah, it definitely did. Oh, and here's another, like, I was violent in footy. This is another true story. I went up to Townsville because my mates were going to James Cook University up there at the time. And I was visiting my mate Richard Vinnett, and he was playing for the university team. And he was like, oh, let this kid play. He's a good player, blah, 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 from Brizzy. And so they let me play in the semi-final against a team that was crucial for them to win. And they're being, this is going back, what, 2004 or 2005? Must be 2005, 2006. And anyways, they're being real racist the whole time during the game. And at the very end of the game, I just lost it. And when I tackled the guy, I booted him in the head. And they got the penalty. I got sent off. They got the penalty kick. And they kicked, and they that lost them the game. So my mate Voucher would be a good player. I just lost them the game to make it to the semis.
So when you say racist, they were racist towards you, or
yeah, not towards me. Yeah, towards me. Like they're just making like Asian jokes the whole game, and then I was getting frustrated. So then in the last play, when the guy came to tackle me, I threw him to the ground, and just booted him in the head, and then
how long ago was that then?
Yeah, like 2005, 2006.
Okay, so what a turnaround, because nowadays.
Oh yeah.
If they're playing racist,
yeah,
they're gonna get set 100%. Up before anything happens.
Yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean? Isn't it weird how those things were just let go back in the day? And
yeah, that's true.
But you got sent for retaliation.
Yeah. Oh, a bit over the top, but yeah.
Did you have much problem with racism in like through it growing up? Or
not in Sydney, not Brisbane. I don't think so.
Just occasional footy game.
Yeah, and occasional fights. Yeah, like I remember. I probably shouldn't mention names. In grade 11 at Nudgee, some guy was targeting me from another school. This African kid was massive to punch on with me because of I made a comment about something from another school. And it was a big deal. Like it was a big deal at the train station, the Castledown train station. Anyways, we ended up punching on. And, you know, I got his.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be G rated.
Yeah. You were telling me you're not going to tell about your naughty yeah, kid.
I actually said, let's not talk about anything bad. I'm trying to paint a good image here. Yeah.
Well, we can't change this once it's gone out.
That's true. It's true stories, though. It is true. And, you know, the truth is I have turned around a lot. Like, I'm a family man now, so I've got two kids. So, 15-year-old and a 6-year-old. So.
And you'd cringe if they got in the same trouble.
Oh, 100%. And now, you know what, being a dad and hearing about bullying on the other end, that when you sort of realize you don't understand as a kid the damages it does. Does that make sense? Like me, I now know the consequences of what I was doing back then. But in my mindset, I was just, you know, trying to be cool, trying to be funny. And then now when I hear about, say, my kid getting bullied, it's sort of like,
I just find that really interesting. And I know you might cringe at some of the stories because it's your experience and you're probably looking back at it, maybe regretful or just you would have done things a bit better. But I think like with the school program that Gareth and I do, Boxing Beyond Barriers, like going out to schools and listen, like this is the age, what you said, 16 to 23, that's the age group that they need to hear stories like that. They need to hear that you can turn it around you know, they need... I feel like I was grateful. I had a lot of good male role models in my life and I got to watch people like you and Gareth and strong males in like what I was doing, and I ended up doing what you guys did, I guess. But I don't think they hear that these sides of the stories enough, you know, like
That's true.
It is okay to feel aggressive and feel violent at that age, but you need to find the outlet.
Yeah, that's true.
A positive one.
It's funny you say that. So because I can relate to that mindset or relate to like, you know, like little rascals as such or little rats. When I hear, say, my partner or other people really condemning, oh, he's a, you know, little shit or he's a fucking rude little kid, I can relate to how they're acting. So I'm like, to me, I'm like, they're not bad kids.
Well, they are,
but they're not bad kids. They just need a little bit more direction. So it's funny because of there's so many times and circumstances where it's like, man, that kid's no good. He's a little troubleshit. But I can relate to how he's thinking or how he acts. So he's like, no, it doesn't mean he's a, like, I turned out okay. You know what I mean? So
100%. I'm the same. Like now, a few years ago, I used to think kids playing up were just little pricks. You know?
That's right.
But now my first thought is, you know, what's going on at home or what else is happening around them to help make them, you know.
Yeah. Who are you looking up to?
Yeah, that's right. Because sometimes we try and get through to kids and then they go home. And they're going back to a really rough situation.
Yeah.
Not that you were, but you were making stupid choices.
Obviously. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Look, don't get me wrong. We haven't all made good choices in our lives. I've made many stupid ones as well, but it's not about me. But, mate, yeah, kids need those role models around. But speaking about role models for you, so Nugget, he's been a huge influence in your life.
Oh,
so
100%,
how was the first meeting with Nugget? How did that all go about? And then when you started with your kickboxing there?
Yeah, so it's actually funny. Like, so it's very different now. The NTG gym now is different to what it was at Newmarket.
Right, yeah.
So it's very, like, I guess you had to really earn your stripes to sort of be training with the fighters. You know what I mean? It wasn't just, like, come in and train and then you're training with the fighters. You really got to sort of earn and prove your worth to sort of get through there. You know, and it's in a sense, it's sort of good because you look up to, like, that's where you want to work towards, you know. Mm-hmm. So, like, for instance, you'd sit, wait, you watch all the pros train first before the sort of general public class started. And then I was doing that for maybe a year or 2 years before I even sort of got noticed to even go to the next sort of training with the, I guess, not even just the fighters, but with the, I guess, like the amateur fighters before training with the fighters. Yeah. So it took a while to even sort of take that process. But now... the gym now is such a big sort of it's a bit different now, you know. So
I'll just say Nugget's been he coached you and now you're working alongside him.
Yeah, it's
running
events. That's right.
It's been you've come 360 with
Nugget. Yeah, but so when you think about it as well, like back then there was Evolution and then there were big wow events. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you'd remember them, Jack. But there were massive events,
Josh,
you know.
Sexton as
Josh Sexton Nugget. Nugget. So when you're looking at that, you're like, wow, that's a wow event sort of factor. And I guess even that sort of maybe started instilling of this is what I want to do. You know, my end goal, a lot of people know, is I want to be a promoter. And as you know, Gareth, it's a hard slog without the right backing.
Yeah.
And so even now, like my focus is now sort of getting back into just managing fighters and promoting fighters. And I guess that's where it sort of started of the inspiration, I guess, or the aspiration to become a promoter because of being involved in events like that, you know.
And knowing what it can look like.
Yeah, what it can look like. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, when it's done right, that's exactly right. So then, yeah, I guess he's had really a strong influence in the sense that the timing of everything even worked out well, that I was living in Springwood when he was moving back to Australia. The gym was in Springwood. So it just worked hand in hand that to be part of the gym, which is right there, you know, so...
I think, Jack, didn't you want to ask him about what's the hardest?
Yeah, well, obviously you've been a professional fighter. You've been a coach, manager, matchmaker, promoter. Out of all those elements. What do you think the hardest part of the fight game is? Is it being the athlete? Is it being the coach? Or
whether being inside the ropes or outside of the ropes?
Yeah, which one's the hardest?
It's, I guess, they all have their pros and cons, you know? Like, as a fighter, the sacrifices you have to make, that's tough. Like, it's very tough, and only you can do that. No one can sort of do that. In terms of the matchmaking, that's also tough. Like, that's probably the hardest part. In terms of putting an event on, that's the easy part. Having the night run, that's the easy part. The matchmaking side of things, that's, I think, the hardest aspect of having, because that's what's going to make the night, whether it's a good night or a bad night, if the matches are good or if the shit matches, you know what I mean? So that's the key crucial part of any event or fight night.
Do you think it's boxing and combat sports that make promoting hard? Like, so if you were you promoted another event, like a rugby league event, do you think you'd have the same sort of issues, or do you think it's fighters are just hard to deal with and their managers? And do you think, what do you think it is?
So there's a lot of politics and a lot of red tape when it comes to promoting. And also, I guess it comes down to who the banners that certain people under, you know, like in America, it's very different into what in the show market is. It's like you're tied in with that promotion and it's very hard to get them sort of cross promoted under different promotions. Here, I guess also it is, there's a lot of red tape that you got to cut through to try to work out the politics and navigate through, you know, and then, you know, you only really understand it deeply through experience. You can't understand it on the outside until you actually go through it and go through that muddy water. You know what I mean? So I don't think anyone's going to understand the politics of boxing on the outside until you actually walk through it. It's
a crazy world because, you know, like as promoters, we're asking athletes to sell tickets and do all this. But on the other hand, you know, if you put a music show on, you're not really asking Beyonce to sell $1 million worth of tickets.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a really tough industry. It's not so huge in Australia to build a name. The media don't want to know unless you've got a name, but building that name is really tough.
Yeah, that's right. And also the following here in boxing, it's so small. Like the pool of fighters available is so small. Mm. So even trying to get the matchmaking, that's why it becomes an expensive project, because you got to bring in a lot of people from international and interstate.
It's funny, like you said, it's the pool's so small, but there's, holy shit, there's so many fucking experts out there.
That's exactly right. I mean? We see them all
over social media every time one of you guys loses, or you're this. Yeah, that's right. Like, oh, come on.
And that's the mindset too. I really hate that a lot of people feel that once you have the loss, then that's the end of a career. It's not, you know what I mean? Like any other sport, like MMA or Muay Thai, like a loss is a loss, but you just move on. And that's because you're fighting the best and you're testing yourself. Mm. So it's going to naturally come. You know what I mean? And it's a mindset, I hope, that changes, because it's not the end of your career with a loss. Like there's so much potential or so much still out there that you learn from that, you know?
Well, I suppose Jack coming off a loss there, what has that taught you?
Oh, shitloads, really. But I feel like that's more outside of boxing than inside of boxing, to be honest, for me. I believe I'm one of the best in the country, if not the world, in the next 5 years. But as far as learning the craft, I've been doing that. It's just learning all the outside factors and just lessons, you know. I've always been one to learn the fucking hard way, you know. And that's, unfortunately, that's shit, but it's a hard lesson. And boxing's not, well, it's not easy. If it was easy, like,
everyone,
how many people
would
do it? It's just easy to tell people how to do it that are actually having a crack. So, I've learned a lot, but more outside the ring than inside. Myself, yeah. Mm. And I think not only me, but everyone around me, we've all brought, like, come together. And then, with my next fight, you know, it'll just evolve and get better and better every time.
Mm. Did you ever think of, like, retiring because of that loss?
No.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah,
Yeah, it's funny to say, and like, obviously I've not really spoken about it too much, but I believe in myself more now than I did before, fucking weird.
Yeah.
And if you told me that, like, I wouldn't have believed it, but that's honestly how I feel in my heart.
It's funny. Speaking of Isaac Hardman, when you were doing some sparring with him, he speaks exactly the same tune. He said, the best thing that happened to me was the Rafa knocking me out.
Yeah, because then it's crazy. Sort of like,
it's like, it's real. I don't have to do all this bullshit that I was doing before. Now I know who I am. my defense is better. But he was saying, he said, I'm a better father. I'm a better husband. I'm just a better human because of it.
Yeah, because then he sort of just zones into now he knows what work needs to be done. That's to right. sort of
you don't have to talk all the bullshit. You know what I mean? You just got to get it done.
Mm, it puts things into perspective. Yeah, 100%. But like, obviously, you had a professional career as well, and you had some wins, had some losses. Mm. But I do remember one night at the Greek Club, you got round of the year on Fox Sports. Did and you want to go into that a little bit, would you? Because I think that was the wildest round I've ever seen.
That was the fight that I stayed at yours because I was too heavy.
It might have been that one. Yeah.
Was it Kyle Tier? I believe.
Yeah,
Kyle Tier. Yeah.
And the interesting backstory in that, I faced him twice in the amateurs, I think, and then that was the third time we were meeting.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, it's a tough one because I truly believe I dropped him in the third in that fight, and I truly believe I won that fight. Mm. But you know, unfortunately, went against me. And the tough lesson on that one was I came off, I think, yeah, was that? No, that was Brett W. Smith fight where I came off the back-to-back knockouts. And then I thought, oh, yeah. And then I put on too much weight.
I'm the man.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm the man.
That was, I think, cutting too much weight. You know yourself, like if you cut too much weight, you're not sort of all there. Oh, so like for me, I just stood there and I just traded and just kept throwing and throwing.
Remember both of you were just going punch, 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 punch.
Steve's best asset definitely wasn't listening.
That's right.
It was, yep, ding, ding, fuck this. Moosh, yeah. Let's have a fight. So yeah, you're always, mate, I'll tell you what though, Steve. Mate, you always used to being a bigger crowd than all these superstars.
Oh, was
it? Mate, you always sold tickets. Heaps of people followed you.
Only because I worked in the nightclubs.
Maybe that was the problem. That's
why you put the weight on.
That's true.
So how's your outside? Let's take sport away from it. How's your outside life going? What is it you're doing with your work and everything at the moment?
Yeah, so well, last year it was really crazy because you know, got the small business, Concrete Genie, which is scanning and well, in the construction sector.
How did that start? What made you want to do that?
Well, okay. So my work life career was.
Here we go. Here we go. It's another story.
It's sort of like, what's that movie? Catch Me If You Can. Anyway, so my work. I had an interesting work-life career, which, you know, as a sales rep, I was an international business development manager. And then from there, with a lot of travel, I just had my daughter. So then I was traveling way too much. So then with some mates, I actually went into business with my mates, which was concrete scanning. And they had this product that was testing concrete. And my mates were plumbers, and this was another side of the business. And then so I bought in, and I was involved in that business. And then in 2019, I really wanted to pursue promoting because I've been promoting since 2013 professionals, but then I'd corporate like shows at 2012. So then I wanted to really pursue like boxing. And then that's when I went to NTG, sold my shares in 2019, went to NTG, got the Mundine Wayne Parr fight. And I thought I'm on the right track trajectory. Like this is the right choice I made. Biggest sort of fight night of my career. 2019 happened. Wasn't as successful as I was hoping it would have been.
I remember
having that was a rough one. And then that was 2019. Then 2020, COVID hit. So then the gym just shut. So then because it was a new gym, there was no government subsidy. You know what I mean?
Is this NTG now?
NTG right now. Yeah, that's right. They opened in August 2019.
Yeah.
And then in March 2020, just shut for 8 months, whatever it was. And then there was no income because you couldn't promote. You couldn't have a gym. You couldn't go to the gym or anything like that. So then we sat there sort of twiddling our thumbs, 8 months, had no income or revenue coming in there. And I was like, well, construction never stopped. So then me, Paulie Nugget, started to open up again in the construction sector, the Concrete Genie. And it's been good because since the time we've opened, the gym did shut down a couple of times because of COVID. Mm. And then it sort of just kept going through working that way. So then I had training the fighters, training the classes, trying to promote, trying to manage fighters, run the business. I was, you know, it's a small business, one-man show, and then raise a family. So there was a lot on my plate. So then I just knew something had to give because it was just too much. And there was just, so with running this business, not only when you work during the day, you got to do the reports for what you do for the day. So then you got to do reports. And then, of course, there's accounts, you got to chase bills, chase invoices, you got people that folded, companies that folded, you know, it's been, you know, any business, it's been a rough slog, but it's definitely on the right sort of trajectory now where it's sort of like, you know, Gareth, you call me during the day, you hear me on site and I'm flat stick. So then I've got to which I do, you know, I have to sort of compartmentalize. This time is for work on site. This time is for boxing promoting. This time is for training. This is for that. So then this year, my focus now sort of stepped away from coaching and training the fighters, that I'm just now focusing more on just managing fighters, promoting, and the business, I guess, and work, really. Yeah.
So you've said you want to be a full-time promoter eventually. Yes. Will you end keep goal. The business? You're hoping to get the business to a stage where it can run itself?
Well, not really. Like,
or will you can it?
No, if I could sell it, I'd sell it. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, construction, it's a hard slog, yeah. You know. Like, and then there's a lot of dodgies where if they can find a way not to pay you, they won't pay you, you know. And In my time, I've had many companies that have closed shop. You know,
very similar to boxing.
Yeah. They owe you a lot of money. You're the bottom of the ladder when it comes to them paying you back, you know. And as a small business, I've had companies that owed me 11 grand, 20 grand. And, you know, in the big scheme, that's not much money. But for a small business, that's a lot of money, you know. So, yeah. It's
the boy's wages, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, no, yeah. So then my sort of day-to-day, and here's the funny thing. So on a day-to-day, I'll be coring concrete walls or whatever, be getting showered in concrete. And then I'll go take it. So lucky I was working at this hotel in Kangaroo Point and one of the rooms was available. So I'd go take a shower and I'll go wear a button-up shirt, but I forgot my pants because there was a press conference for one of Ricky's fights at the casino. Go to the press conference in work stubbies and a button-up top, do the press conference, then go back to site, get in my high-vis, and then start bloody working again. And it's always like that. So I always keep like a spare shirt, like a polo or a button-up, because then I'll be getting dirty, then I'll get changed, go to a meeting or go like – and I've actually been lucky, so I'll be working, say, like on Mary Street. My meeting will be on Mary Street, or I'll be at the Gabba and my meeting's in Kangaroo Point, you know. So they've always been sort of close by, and my days will be changing at a high-vis into a button-up, back in the high-vis, getting dirty, back in the way, like that. So that's how. And then there's some funny stories as well. When I was working at Sky Tower, and it's a big EBA job, and I always put people in speaker. I remember Chock ringing me one time, and then I was helping him with his walkout songs, and I think it was into the lead. No, this is before the Mundine Wayne Power fight, and he was sort of describing how he wanted his walkout song. So he starts talking like, you know, in Aboriginal, and then going into like a Muslim prayer, but he's on speaker. And everyone around me can hear it. I'm like, hey, Chock, come on side. I'll give you a call back after. He goes, all right, bro, I'll talk to you after. Hung up. And everyone around me is like, mate, who the fuck was that? And I was like, that was Anthony Mundine. He's just rapping away on me on loudspeaker. You know, so.
Can you remember when you brought that rap song out back in the day with, Joel, something on the Dead Poet Society or something. Can you remember?
No, which one was it?
It was like years ago. The guy that he brought a rap song out with, Mundine brought a rap song out with, he actually was a finalist on like early days Australian Idol, like talking 20 years ago. Chock released a song.
Yeah, I can't remember.
You want to give us a verse, Gareth?
I was about to, but maybe get Chock on the podcast.
Yeah.
He can sing it for us.
He can relive it.
You'll have to ask him about that.
Yeah.
You've never heard it.
No. I will definitely ask him.
YouTube it tonight, I reckon.
Yeah.
That's the crack.
I was actually in Papua New Guinea with Chock when the Pacquiao thing happened. So I'm like, mate, I got to be in your court against my – I'll be his towel boy or water boy against my country hero man.
Traitor.
Yeah, that's right.
Make sure if you're the water boy, make sure it's sealed because you'll get
Chock
over there.
I seen you might be fighting Conor Benn. You see that?
Who?
Pacquiao?
Yeah, I saw that as well.
Really?
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
Have they got the same thing in common? Ooh.
Ooh, Widgie. He's dissing your hero, though. Right.
I remember me and Widgie were at war when Ricky Hatton fought Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao. He's always...
Yeah, I'll never forget. I was at my...
Yeah. That was funny.
And I was like, and then Ricky just... Fucking
and then when Ricky came when he came for you and I picked him up at the airport.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
You were his runner.
Yeah, right? And then he goes to me, he goes... Because he saw my tattoo of like the Philo flag. And he goes, all right, trust him to send a Filipino to come pick me up. That was the best.
Yeah, nice.
I'll never forget that. I remember, it was me, Ricky Hatton, Damien Hooper, Brad Hall, and Maddie Clark. We're walking up the sunny coast to go to like some news press conference. And some guy's running, like some Darrow. And then he bumps into Ricky Hatton. He's like, watch where you're fucking going, mate. Kept running. And I was like, man, I hope that guy watches the news tonight to just realize, like, who's in, you know, you got two Olympians, Damien Hooper and Brad Hoare, and then you got freaking Ricky Hatton, like, and you're telling him, watch where he's going. Welcome to Australia.
Welcome to the sunny coast.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. All right, mate. So where's life going forward? Where do you see it in 10 years' time?
I think it's on a good track now in the terms of the focus of managing and promoting. You know, like I talk to you a lot, that there's a lot of fighters that I'm starting to get signing on.
Yeah.
So, you know, making it legit and starting to matchmake. And I'm, you know, I've got a lot of shows coming up where we got March 17th next week at the Greek Club. Then Ange has his April 1st, which I'll be helping out on that. Then there's the one that you're doing with Steve, April 21st.
21st. Yeah,
21st, RNA.
That'll be good. That's a real good purpose.
Yeah, that's right. It's a charity event all for the kids. Yeah, there's heaps coming up. Then my next one's June. Then there's July. Yeah, so.
So let's give it a bit of a plug. Let's talk about your next show. Like who's on it, where it's at.
Yeah, it's so in terms of like, I'm really excited about it because the matchups are actually stylistically good matchups. Mm. They're good matchups and they're going to be exciting fights. So there's no like wow factor in the sense of like, two big names against each other, but you've got a big name in each corner, you know what I mean? So you've got Rocky Ogden on there, and he's always exciting to watch. And the guy that he's fighting from Papua New Guinea, when I was there in December, he was actually the fighter that stood out for me on the night. So the Louis Magava's 2-0, and he was their Commonwealth Games representative. And he's
what weight was he Comm Games at?
I think featherweight. So I'm pretty sure
they had quite a good team at the Comm Games for Gold Coast.
Yeah, he was strong.
Remember Liam Wilson fought, a really tough PNG kid.
I'm not too sure who he's fought, but they just told me he was the Commonwealth Games rep because I was who's that kid? And like, Liam McGarvin. I'm like, what weight? Featherweight. I'm like, I can use him. So that's how that matchup came about. And he actually, he comes to bang and he's 2-0 against a 3-0. You got Nathan Watson on St. Paddy's Day. And now Nathan Watson versus Ryan Heck stylistically is an exciting matchup. Mm. I think that's going to be a really good clash and a good war. And then Ken Atkins is fighting for his first state title, Queensland welterweight title against Aaron Stahl and Aaron Foote, Nikita Zhu. So like that's his wow factor. But he comes to fight too. So they're on that same even playing field where that will be a good clash up. Mariah's turning pro against Kelly Ryan. And women's fight, I've never seen a boring girls fight. They've always just thrown down. And then you got Justin Martin. Justin Martin versus this is my card. Okay. Maddie Wilson. Matthew Wilson. Yeah. So that's.
Now you've said from day one that that should be a fight.
Because it's just going to be two guys coming to just have a crack. You know what I mean? Like they're just going to.
He come sparred me a few times, helped me out here and there. Justin's a good bloke, man. And he's a good clubman too. Like he tried to sell tickets for the team and stuff. And every time he's in there, he has a crack. And same with Ryan Heck, man. Ryan Heck, he can go. He's quite cagey early. And like, I do believe Nathan will beat him, but it's a good fight, you know. Yeah. Like you're saying, they're good matchups for that.
Stylistically, they're good. Yeah, just on paper, local level. Yeah, people won't know. Mm. Like even Gene Shaw versus Patrick Conan, people won't know who they are, but they're gonna come to fight. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So,
and it's fights like this that are 50-50s. It's hard that these shows aren't getting the publicity that they probably deserve. You know.
Yeah,
like,
I think a lot of the boxing shows they don't get the light that they deserve, you know. So in the general public eyes, everyone thinks boxing is such a big wow thing.
That's
exactly right. But the reality of it is it's such a small little industry and small circle. So
Everyone thinks you're on $1 million a fight too.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, they do.
Yeah, well, and then everyone thinks that the promoters are ripping everyone off, but we're the ones going broke.
Selling their houses because we can't get next week. Holy shit. All right, Steve. Well, thank you very much. Anything more, Jacko?
No, mate. I just, like, for me, it was good to know a little bit more about your upbringing, Steve, and what you're up to now, because I've obviously only seen you in a very narrow light, and you've been a bit of a good influence in my life as well, and appreciate that.
It's so good seeing, man. Like, I remember seeing you and your family when you were a little kid, and then growing up to the man that you are now. You know, it's awesome to see that with so many of the boxers in the boxing community.
Yeah, you see me dad on site, cutting concrete. Yeah, old jaws and driveway.
Mate, well, thanks, Steve, very much for your time. It's good that you're on. This would have been a lot of good podcast, but when you turn up 35 minutes late, we can't do much about that.
Filipino time.
Philippines. Mate, thank you very much. Really appreciate it, Steve.
Anytime. Thanks,
thank you very much.
Thanks, Jack.
And thanks for listening to the G&JB show. We'll be back.
Talk about your guests you got on next week, mate.
Next week.
Little intro.
Mate, do you want to do it? He's your boy.
He is my mate. One of the Friday Friday morning elite down here at the boxing shop, Michael Booth, ex-NRL or NRO, or it was
he didn't play NRO, but he played in the years when Brisbane Rugby League was as big as Sydney Rugby League.
Next week will be a bit of shit talk, I reckon.
Mate, if you can understand bit of banter. If you can understand his voice, he'll be like croaky the big fella. Sounds like Darren Lockyer. But...
Well, Boothie would have been there since Widgie was there too.
Yeah, he would be.
Yeah, Boothie. Yeah. Yeah, in the...
Actually, yeah, I remember him.
You remember. But he's been here since day dot, you know, so...
Since the start.
Mate, Michael Booth next week.
Can I just say real quickly? So from training at the boxing shop when he was back at Griffith Uni, like how many years ago was that?
Well, we opened in 07.
It would have been there maybe 08.
Maybe 08, yeah.
Yeah, no, really. And so the friendships that are still like, man, Darren McCosker, such a great player. Yeah, you know, like the people from there still, that still so close-knit, it's crazy.
I run into Darren the other day in Cornubia, and I was walking out. It was just after he told me my fight got cancelled. I got fucking Krispy Kremes. I got chocolates. And he's looking at me. He didn't say anything. I thought, good boy, Darren, leave me alone.
Yeah.
Thought he'd been straight on the phone to you.
He did call me straight up.
But that's what I mean. Like, you look at the community of the friendship still from here. Yeah. It's crazy. So, but it's good.
And that's what hopefully this game gives us. You know what I mean? We got to look after each other and still be mates. And when someone's going through a rough time, we sort of back each other and help each other.
Yeah, that's true.
What it's got to be. That's what it's got to be. But Michael Booth next week, mate, the Batley Bulldogs legend, the Eastern Suburbs superstar, and... What school did he go to again?
Gingin High.
Gingin Private. Never existed. All right.
One school.
We'll look forward to speaking to you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Widgie.
Sorry again for being late.
No, I was sad to bring it up.